Kyle Sondland and Herbert Konins are founding partners of Security Token Group. All opinions expressed by them or guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not represent the views of Security Token Group or its subsidiaries. You should not take any opinion expressed on the show as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow any investment strategy. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Security Token Show. We're coming to you from our studio in sunny Miami, Florida, and I'm your host, Herbert Konings, and I'm joined by my co-host and business partner, Kyle Sondland. And before we get started, I'd like to share a word from our sponsor. This week's episode of the Security Token Show is sponsored by Fair Islands Distillery. The company is launching an exclusive whiskey and gin distillery in the remote Faroe Islands, which provides the optimal environment for whiskey maturation, which, by the way, accounts for 70 to 80% of the flavor, if you didn't know that. And different gin botanicals as well that are specific for the islands there, creating exotic flavor profiles for collectors and connoisseurs to enjoy. Distilleries require significant upfront costs to create the product, so the firm is selling equity via a security token offering for the opportunity. On top of a $700,000 crowd fund raise that they did last year, the firm is now selling an additional 23% of the company through a security token offering that is also including annual dividends once the liquor has been produced and sold, which is actually expected to be sometime in 2025. And if you want to learn more about this innovative project, learn more at fair.io. That's F-A-E-R.io.
Thanks so much to our sponsor for this week's episode, Fair Distilleries. It's a cool project. We've talked about it on the show before, and exciting to see that they've had a lot of progress so far. And so if you're new to the Security Token Show, or you're a returning listener, you'll know the way we do the show is we kick it off with our Companies of the Week segment. This is where we dive into two companies that caught Herwig and my eye on who made the biggest moves. What was the one piece of headline that we had to cover first, give them that award, and then from there we go into the top five. This is where Herwig and I will bounce back and forth, talk about some of the biggest headlines in the space that didn't quite make the cut for Company of the Week, but are really important, you can't miss them. From there, Herwig moves into his industry news update segment, covering everything else that happened. I move into my security token offering segment. We talk about the market, the trading system, all that good stuff. And then from there, we're moving into our main topic. And what's our main topic this week, Herwig?
Well, Kyle, we're going to be talking about how big banks are going to leverage security tokens and blockchain. And I think it's going to be a pretty fun one. There's a lot of different applications you might not have thought about.
Absolutely. So with that, we may as well move into our Companies of the Week.
Let's do it.
What, episode 97 this week. Who do you got?
Approaching episode 100.
Almost. 100, coming quick.
That should be good. But my company of the week is one of the biggest banks in the world. Everyone's familiar with it, Morgan Stanley, which has officially made an investment in the security token space, the first that's known, actually, and they invested recently in Securitize, which we'll get to in a little bit, but it's a big, big validation that a giant bank like Morgan Stanley is making an investment in an infrastructure company like Securitize. It's a really big deal, especially because Morgan Stanley is actually taking a board seat in the company, which carries a lot of influence and power, which means that they are definitely seeing a long-term value in this technology, and they plan to be involved as a part of it. So congratulations to Securitize there as well. But Morgan Stanley, you get my company of the week for bringing more attention to security tokens.
That's exciting. We've talked about this many times on the show. These big banks are getting involved. They understand the value of this stuff. And this is just one of the most explicit ways we've seen that happen so far. And one of those ways big banks can get involved in the space, which we'll talk about later.
We absolutely will. Now, Kyle, who do you have for our watchers here, our fans?
So my company of the week for episode 97, they have a live trading security token, and they've now launched another fund. This is Blockchain Capital. They just raised a $300 million fund five, and the investors in this were from a lot of different places, but a couple ones to note were PayPal and Visa. There are a couple large financial service providers getting involved in the blockchain space. BCAP, though, isn't necessarily focused on security tokens and deploying this fund. They're really focused on the broader blockchain ecosystem. However, they did participate in the Securitize round, so you know they're pretty active in a lot of this stuff as well, but they're really trying to be a little bit more industry agnostic on the blockchain side. They've also invested in Coinbase, Kraken, Anchorage, Aave, OpenSea, so they do NFTs, they do DeFi, they do blockchain, crypto, and security tokens. So they've launched another huge monster fund, but Unfortunately, this one is not going to be tokenized. They tokenized a portion of Fund 3. We're now on Fund 5. So 4 and 5, they haven't tokenized at all, which is kind of upsetting to see, honestly, because Blockchain Capital has done pretty well in the secondary markets. We'd love to see them get access for one of these other funds as well, but here's hoping for the next one.
They're definitely one of the best fund managers in the blockchain game, so congratulations to them, a $300 million fund. As we can see, some of it is going into our industry, so that's a great sign for things to come as well.
And with that, I think we can transition into our top five this week.
Let's do it.
So moving into our top five, we're kicking it off with article number one, and this is Securitize raising $48 million. Ooh. This is a round led by Morgan Stanley, your company of the week this week, as well as Blockchain Capital, who is my company of the week this week. And so this is a huge round led by Morgan Stanley and BCAP. And so the Pedro Teixeira, who's the co-head of Morgan Stanley's tactical value team, came out and he's actually going to be joining the board of Securitize as well. Big deal.
Big deal. It's a massive sign of validation from both Blockchain Capital, who is continuing their investment. They've got other great investors like Algorand, Ava Labs, and Sumitomo Mitsui as well out of Japan, as well as many, many others, including Morgan Stanley. Huge validation. That's why we chose them as our companies of the week, for making a strategic bet on a company like Securitize, which is definitely now proven that is here to stay and is here to scale the product market fit that it's found with its tokenization platform. And we do know that imminently, we expect, you know, the marketplace that they've been touting for a while now that's going to launch should be coming out to market soon, as well as two additional products, their own funds that are going to be tokenized that they're launching as well. So lots of good stuff happening for Securitize, but most of all, I think, Kyle, we're excited about the fact that it shows that this industry is moving into its next phase.
Large banks, large firms getting involved. Visa and PayPal led the Blockchain Capital round that was then leading this round. So you got Morgan Stanley, you got Visa, you got PayPal, you got all these huge players that are, they know what's coming. They see this wave coming and you love to see it.
Moving on to number two, we actually see some big bank activity out in Europe, where we saw the Central Bank of France actually continue more experiments trialing with blockchain to settle securities, this time around with SIBA Bank out of Switzerland, as well as working with, Bank International Luxembourg to work and create this most recent successful experiment here. So they actually plan to continue to do more of this throughout the year, which again shows you that, especially we'll get into it in a little bit, that the big banks are looking at this technology very, very seriously.
Yeah, they launched in March 2020, so they completed, I guess, maybe about a year trial using CBDCs, and it worked out very well for them. The settlement process was clear, it worked out smoothly, and here's hoping that they launch more products or bring something to the public test.
The Bank of France actually developed a CBDC, a central bank digital currency, so it's a digital euro that they've been using as part of this settlement and clearing process, which they've also done successfully with Société General, another bank in France. But this one is different because we now have some cross-jurisdiction overlap here, and it was still a successful trial. So definitely check that out if you're interested more in that. Kyle, what's number three?
Number three, we're going into Singapore. And another exchange has been approved by the Monetary Authority of Singapore, this time coming from HG Exchange, HGX. And so the goal here is to launch a platform to trade digital and non-digital securities to a global investor base for global companies. They have this global mindset, and that's fantastic because, as we just talked about, multi-jurisdictional assets, trading, and access is going to be incredibly important when we're talking about security tokens. And so they're focused on a lot of different assets. They're trying to be very agnostic here. They noted specifically in the press release high growth companies, funds, and loan products, as well as unconventional financial products, including luxury goods such as art, wines, and whiskeys. So they're trying to get involved in a lot of different angles here.
A broad platform and a big deal to graduate and be able to now be operational with an MAS. They've got a great model over in Singapore where they have this fintech sandbox that you can operate in with a limited, you know, capability, but under the watchful eye of the regulator, so that you can test your platform and launch and prove your use case. And they certainly did that. In their press release, they noted $500,000 a month for the previous last 6 months in trading volume. So there is activity happening on these platforms in Singapore, and now they're ready to go big, clearly very big, because they're going to list almost just about anything.
fantastic to see. We now have ADDX, which was formerly iStox, as well as HGX, and a few others that have been approved as well. Singapore is a hotbed for security token activity.
Moving into number four, we have Wedbush and Paxos. Wedbush is a $2 billion plus asset manager and client services, financial services provider, and they have partnered up with Paxos to be one of the seven that Paxos is able to work with on providing security settlement, focusing on stocks and leveraging the blockchain for the same use case as we just saw with the Bank of France to, you know, clear and settle securities, U.S. securities in this case, instantly.
So Paxos launched the Paxos Settlement Service, which is a private permissioned blockchain solution allowing for that bilateral trade settlement between the two different parties. And they also have that immediate settlement instead of that 2+2 that we've been talking about from an analog perspective. Presumably, Bank of America is another one of these seven that they're working with. We covered that a few weeks ago. It was also going to be settling securities, leveraging the Paxos settlement solution on chain. And the one fascinating piece that I wanted to drop in here is that they note in the press release that the PSS, the Paxos Settlement Service, reduces transaction fees by 70%.
That's a lot.
And reduces clearing capital requirements, which is you need to put up some collateral in order to settle securities. So 70%, that seems really high, but even if that's true, or even if you're, you know, you need to take 50%, I mean, which banks, which financial service providers aren't going to want to use this for their transactions?
Clearly the future. And Paxos, for those of you who don't know, that's why we keep referring this one of seven, has a no action letter from the SEC, which means they basically won't get any enforcement action from the SEC to provide these settlement services to seven specific firms. That's what they're limited to in order to test out their technology before needing the right licenses to move forward. So that's a big deal that Paxos was able to receive that. And now they're working with some great partners. So congratulations to Wedbush and Paxos there. That's some great stuff.
And finally, number five, we have a partnership between Standard Chartered Bank as well as BC Group. And they're coming together to launch a JV, joint venture, to offer crypto trading, buying, and custody services for their international clients. BCG has a tech platform called the OSL. That is where they're actually leveraging a lot of the tech. And then Standard Chartered, being one of the largest banks in the world, is then providing the client access for this. So there's more and more digital asset demand around the world. A lot of that is focused specifically on crypto, Ethereum, and other digital assets. But this is a big-time partnership, and they're getting involved.
OSL is one of the leading Hong Kong digital securities and blockchain, you know, infrastructure providers, and one of the regulated players out there. But partnership with Standard Bank, or Standard Chartered, I mean, they have over three quarters of a, you know, $1 billion, $750 billion, or $1 trillion, I should say, in assets under management. That's a crazy amount. This is one of the biggest banks in the world, and they have just said that they're going to partner up and launch a digital asset venue for the Europe area. So for specifically focusing in this jurisdiction, we know Standard Chartered is based in the UK. So presumably, as they per their press release, they're going to be working to bring their network to Standard Chartered, or to BC Group, or in this case, most likely OSL's specific technology, to merge the two and make this all possible.
Industry adoption is happening every minute of the day. That's our top five, and take it away with the industry news.
Let's get to it. And getting into our security token news, we start off with the Asia Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association, which has officially made a public statement that regulators in Asia need to do more to foster security token growth in their accompanied report. They say that Japan, Singapore, and Hong Kong all have issued some guidelines, but other countries are still lagging behind and need to catch up for the, according to the industry association. And moving on, in a company announcements, we saw a startup called Blockfilm partnering up with Token Funder in order to launch the first ever tokenized production financing opportunities in Canada, which means that accredited investors there can now go invest in media and production and entertainment investments. I mean, who doesn't like calling themselves a movie producer? And now that is possible, so congratulations to the pair for making this available to our northern neighbor. And for the past few episodes, you might have noted that Polymath has been on a partnership spree to add node operators for their Polymesh blockchain. And the latest one to recognize is Oasis Pro, which actually has a license, an SEC FINRA license, to be a trading platform for security tokens. So presumably that means that Oasis Pro will support Polymesh tokens since they are now also a node operator. And moving into some resource articles worth checking out, I think worth your time. We start off with an article by Brian Korn, who's a partner at the law firm Manat in New York. There he leads the fintech practice, where he also provides legal advice on compliance, including crypto as well as capital markets. And he has announced in an interview on Crowdfunding Insider that he is seeing more demand for tokenization from crypto funds for tokenizing their LP shares. And specifically when it comes to security tokens, he said, quote, "I think we will get to a point where some of the DeFi developers will move towards electronic trading of mainstream listed stocks, and then we will see benefits from technological advances such as instant clearing and trade reporting." So now even the crypto attorneys are starting to see the shift, folks. That's huge. And over on CoinDesk, we saw Dominic Dante secure a nice piece on different security industry leaders and industry research focused on the expected resurgence of the security token industry, as he says it. It's worth a read, but if you have to pick just one, I might go with Peter Gaffney's latest edition of Tokenize This, where he discusses tokenizing wholesaling. He thinks revenue sharing tokens have a real use case for wholesale businesses, which he says have margins as high as 50%, which means there is room to share and grow the pie for token holders there, as well as for wholesale businesses to get fair financing terms. Not to mention some of these trends and fans that end up going up on e-commerce and wholesale can be really, really huge and equal a lot of dough. So check that out on Security Token Market blog. And that's all I've got from you last week. Let's go get the latest on the security token markets from Kyle.
Kicking off our security token news, we're starting with a few updates from some companies that we've covered in the past. According to a new blog post from Exordium, which if you don't remember, is the publisher behind the Infinite Fleet online strategy game that has launched an equity security token, they confirmed that more than 800 investors from across the EU have invested so far through the Stalker platform for a total of 4.2 million euros. The hard cap is 12 million, and the company confirmed in the post that they will be opening up the fundraise to US and other additional countries as well, which is great news. It's going to be interesting to compare how they've done so far and see if the additional countries can drive them closer to that $12 million mark. And from our other update comes from a second Stalker project. This is Blockstream, which is selling shares of a Bitcoin mining company. The firm has officially sold over 50% of its target 6.6 million euros. It's great to see that, and hopefully they can keep the momentum going now because they've also raised over 4 million euros. Moving into our new security token offering segment, we also have two great ones to cover. First up is BPN Capital, who has announced the launch of the first tokenized commercial mortgage-backed loan. Backed by commercial property in the heart of Miami's financial district, Brickell, the firm is launching a security token offering backed by four commercial tenants, Chipotle, Kaori, Oyo de Agua, and Belilo. This is a block that I pass on a daily basis, and I'm psyched to see this announcement. We were actually fortunate enough to host Edward Rodriguez, the CEO of BPN Capital, to our office here for a full interview, which we will be publishing on the Security Token Market YouTube channel soon. The property value is $24 million with a financing based on a 70% loan-to-value ratio, meaning that the firm will be raising $16.8 million from investors. According to Rodriguez, the tokens could be available as early as this month to accredited investors, family offices, and qualified buyers in the US. Finally, German issuer Auto1FT is offering a debt product with a short maturity of just 1 year and an attractive interest rate of 5.5% paid quarterly. Auto1FT has developed a product that supports car dealers by providing flexible and rapid liquidity. The supplier finances the purchase price of the vehicles until their resale to the end consumer. These bonds will be executed by IVE.1 and managed by the Agora Innovation Platform. They're looking to raise up to $4 million for their offering, and you can check out more at auto1-ft.com. Now let's move into our secondary market trading segment. As always, all news and pricing data is sourced from stomarket.com. Kicking it off with a few articles on the trading market, we're going to start with First Shot Centers. First Shot has tokenized their equity, which is now available for trade on the Crypto SX platform. The firm's business model is to acquire and manage vacant shopping centers and big box stores throughout the United States. Because these properties are taken and then repurposed into entertainment and theme centers for a specialized business sector with a revenue-generating strategy already in place. Competition from online shopping sites has contributed to the square footage equivalent of more than 10,000 empty and available malls and big box stores across the country, and these distressed purchase prices can be a fraction of the replacement costs. At a current price of $1.79, the market cap of the token is currently over $36 million, which puts it at number 4 on our leaderboard. The token saw some strong volume on initial listing as well, with over 700,000 in volume over just the past 2 weeks. In terms of the total trading market, after factoring in the fact that we added First Shot, which increased our market cap to over $778 million, we're now getting closer and closer to that $1 billion mark. There wasn't a ton of heavy action this week from our big hitters as T0 and Overstock and BCAP were pretty flat, but we did see plenty of movement from the real estate tokens, which were up an average of about 2.8% across all 85 plus properties. A few, like Fullerton, were up over 16% this week, while others like Sunderland Road were down nearly 7%. And these properties do swing pretty drastically as the Levenswap pricing algorithm constantly adjusts the price based on the volume, as well as the volume of liquidity of the underlying pool. With an average of 2.8%, in addition to the double-digit dividends that are paid out by these properties each year, it seems like it was a good week to be invested in the tokenized real estate sector. And that wraps up the market report this week. So send me all your hot takes on the best investments you want to make in the security token space on Twitter. But with that, I think it's time to move into our main topic this week.
Getting to our main topic for episode 97, we're going to be talking about how blockchain is being used, specifically security tokens, by the big banks of the world. In fact, we have an article up on the blog, the Security Token Market blog. You can check it out, where we cover out of the top 100 banks, almost 50 of them are working on blockchain and security token projects, experiments like the one we saw with Societe Generale in our top 5 today. And that's happening all around the world in a couple of different specific use cases. So today, Kyle and I, we're going to drill down, what are the big ones that they're looking at? How can we expect the world's largest financial institutions and banks to start to get involved in the security token space?
And so when we're talking about this, banks, the first thing that you think about is the currency, right? Is the CBDC. We've talked about this term before, central bank digital currency. So you have a fiat currency, it's managed very manually. You've got outstanding dollars or euros or whichever assets. And there's a forex exchange. So you've got these banks that are taking securities and settling products around the world with international investors and international banking partners, and they're exposed to significant amounts of forex price changes, as well as the manual process of owning and holding specific dollars or fiat assets. And so creating a CBDC is tremendously valuable and beneficial for a bank, where they can automatically and programmatically manage their outstanding asset or their outstanding fiat in this case, as well as really being able to iron down specifically where their assets are going and how they're being managed.
Yeah, central bank digital currencies are a big wave. We saw a lot of research, if you want to go check it out, by the Bank of International Settlements, the BIS. They do a lot of research on this. They've been working with a lot of all the major central banks around the world. We also have an article on that specifically. Short on the number, but I think it might be almost 60 different central banks around the world are in some way or application, whether it's they call a wholesale CBDC, where they're actually just working from bank to bank networks, or where they're actually having retail CBDCs, where actually us consumers end-to-end have access to this direct central bank money. In this case, in the United States, we've even seen the Fed talk about exploring a digital dollar, and that could be used in a retail application. We may one day have our dollars. Usually, in fact, it's happening right now in China, where there's global or nationwide outreach and distribution of their central bank digital currency, which is the yuan, that you can actually use now to buy goods with your phone, with your yuan, and actually go to ATMs and convert real cash in between and out of the digital version. Of course, many benefits to this, right? The central banks can track all the capital easier. They can move it more cost efficiently. Drill down on that again, the Bank of International Settlements, lots of great information there for if you're more interested in that.
And it's been interesting, as CBDCs have entered into the mainstream vernacular a little bit more consistently here in 2021, especially with China launching their yuan that's been widely adopted over there and in some other investments they've made internationally, We have seen a lot of pushback around this idea of the privacy component of, okay, if we launch a digital dollar or a digital fiat, how much control is a central bank going to have over our finances and seeing what we have and what we own? And it's been fascinating to see the different solutions that have come out. China presumably is managing their own private ledger. They haven't come out and really detailed how that process is going to work. The US, the Fed, has come out stating specifically that they identify that privacy is a key concern here. They want to find ways to make that solution, to adapt and to provide a private solution, or at least something that's semi-private for their consumers. And then you've got companies like the Bank of France, or excuse me, companies, central banks like the Bank of France, that have already piloted central bank digital currency trials, and they are actually using zero knowledge proofs, which is a very technical concept involving Merkle trees and sharding processes to allow for them to settle these transactions and benefit from the blockchain-based solution without actually getting the full picture of where this stuff is going. So it actually does provide some level of protection for those that are leveraging these transactions in a way that can still be very optimized and leverage blockchain solutions. So there's a really wide range of how these central bank digital currencies may be structured from a technical perspective, and it will be fascinating to see how that's a new concept. When you think about Forex, when you think about currencies, usually you would just compare a country's, you know, GDP to determine which currency you want to use. Now you also may need to consider the structure of the actual underlying asset.
I think you absolutely will be. In fact, you noted on something there about central bank digital currency and also stable coins in general. They're a critical part of the future financial ecosystem. If it's all going to move digital, if all stocks and equities and products like that are going to move digital, we need to, as you said, be able to settle those using a digital currency, not just physical cash, which is one of the issues that plagues a lot of these banks in the first place. So let's get into that second big feature that I think big banks are looking at, and that is, of course, clearing and settling securities trades instantly. You mentioned that they were able to do it, you know, without necessarily even knowing all of the specific information from the third parties. It was maybe validated on chain by third party oracles, as they say, to verify data is real, but the bank necessarily didn't need to know all the information, which is how a lot of the financial, you know, infrastructure is built on today, not trusting each other with specific information. So it's exciting to see that we've got many, many banks all around the world, you know, trialing out this technology on different blockchains and different use cases, and actually all finding tremendous success in terms of creating value in efficiencies and savings and new opportunities to bring features to their customers.
Absolutely right. I mean, instant settlement is one of the biggest advantages of blockchain and smart contract solutions, I think in total, because of the fact that you're talking about a significant cost in terms of settling these transactions. Because as a bank or as a broker, you need to work with a clearinghouse or a specific firm that's dedicated in validating all of those transactions and settling the books at the end of the day. They obviously take significant fees on that, but that's not even the biggest cost. You have two additional costs that I think sometimes get lost on people. One that's a little more obvious is the T+2 settlement system here in the traditional markets, where you've got multiple days where these shares are just sitting there and they're not fully settled, and it does provide some complications. It can screw over companies like Robinhood that get these tremendously inflated capital requirements because of late settlement periods and things like that. The T+2 system is very inefficient in a high-frequency trading environment that we live in today. In a tech world, these trades need to be settled faster because this long delay period causes serious issues. But not only does it cause serious infrastructural issues, it's a lot of value that's left on the table. Because what we're seeing, what we've seen over the past year, is that these clearinghouses are strategically leveraging that T+2 settlement period to actually trade on those shares as they sit in a float. And so they're actually making trades on this float, which is removing value from the bank or from the investor, and is being kind of just sucked away by a clearinghouse. So you're just leaving a lot on the table. Mike Cagney pointed it at 3-6% in just settlement and clearing savings just by leveraging blockchain solutions. And we have numbers as high as 70 from Paxos. So there's a serious percentage savings here at different pieces of the pie. And it just makes all the sense in the world for firms to use.
It's super valuable for everybody involved. Obviously, this is definitely big on the operational side of things for a bank, but it is also good for the investor. In fact, now that we're seeing investment banks and big asset managers look into this and say, you know what, We're going to tokenize and digitize all of our financial products and all the assets that we're managing so that we can enable faster information, new access to financial products, digital access to financial products, and potentially new liquidity capabilities by digitizing all of these securities that they manage. And that's, I think, the next and final feature that we can talk about here is the idea that, you know what, if banks are leveraging a completely digital settlement and money management system, then what does this mean for stocks and financial products in general? I think it means much larger and faster distribution. It means a whole new model for settling overnight and for trading securities between different platforms. And it obviously means that we now have a more tight and potentially closer alignment between the different banks and parties that are here to support trading between, of course, buyers and sellers. And that's what's important at the end of the day.
Absolutely right. I mean, banks are the main proponents of selling and facilitating the trade of corporate debt. And so they underwrite significant amounts of debt, both in the real estate sector as well as from a corporate perspective and even bank to bank. And debt is traditionally so illiquid. They still manage debt on you know, private markets where guys are calling each other and, hey, I've got $50 million of debt in this specific company, here's the rainbow, blah, blah, let's sell it to some other bank. They still manage it that way. It's not a digital market at all. It's fascinating. And this is a huge opportunity to provide more liquidity for that kind of asset. I read a figure that there's between $50 and $100 trillion in debt trading volume per year that's happening OTC. It's still happening in a non-digital process. You can save a couple percent on that. You're talking about trillions of dollars that are entering into the system here that are newly captured liquidity options for those investors. Not to mention that those bonds are probably going to be priced more efficiently because it's a more efficient capital market.
Yeah, that's why we've seen examples like HSBC come out and say we're, you know, focusing on tokenizing bonds in specifically in Asia, as well as many other banks around the world doing the same exact thing. So we've got digital cash enabling us instant clearing and settlement, enabling a whole new digital way of managing assets and participating in investments. And that's why security tokens are very, very interesting to big banks, because it'll certainly, you know, if they don't get wise, they're going to get their lunch eaten by the startups that are coming after them. As we've just seen HG Exchange get launched in Singapore, we're seeing more and more platforms launch every day, so we're gonna see how much closer they want to get to this.
Firms are raising money, products are being launched, assets are getting tokenized. Now is the time that banks are starting to realize that they can't sit on the sidelines for too much longer, because it's just the efficiencies and the opportunity here is just so clear.
There's absolutely no stopping it, and I think that's a good place to stop and conclude another episode of the Security Token Show. We hope you enjoyed. We hope you learned something. Please reach out to Kyle or myself on LinkedIn or Twitter if you have questions. Of course, be sure to submit any news and events and anything you want us to cover on the show at stomarket.com/news, as well as go there to STO Market in general to get your latest trading pricing information, check out our blog for some great resources, and of course, every week on Thursday, we have our speakeasy on the Clubhouse, the Security Token Speakeasy, where we bring on guest panelists from the industry to talk about the latest show. And if you don't have time for any of that, just simply subscribe to our newsletter, the What's Dripping newsletter, where you get a digest every Monday about everything that's happening in the space.
Thanks so much for listening. Send us your feedback, leave a like, leave a comment, and we'll talk to you next week.
Happy tokenizing.